The Rising Coaches Podcast is brought to you by Connor Sports, the market leader in sports, athletic, and gym flooring. Connor Sports, where champions play. Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by Cassius Bosket of Recruiting Boost. We're excited to have him on the podcast. We have a great conversation about recruiting, the landscape of it, and how much it's changed in the last 2-3 years even. And some of the mistakes that college programs make all the time in recruiting, and what some of the best programs do best in recruiting and make sure they do every time. Really fascinating stuff, and also talk about Cassius's outside-the-box approach to the coaching industry and his path and his journey and where he hopes it leads him. Hope you enjoy, and if you do, we hope you will subscribe to the podcast. Thanks for listening. Cassius, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Gordo. How are you?
I'm doing good. So you just got back from Thailand. Are you still jet lagged, or are you completely over it?
I mean, I'll tell you what. I'm not a morning person, and ever since I got back, I've been up at 6 a.m. every day. Like, I've been a morning person my whole life, so I'm still pretty jet lagged.
I guess we should tell people you were over there for the FIBA Asia tournament, right?
Yeah, I went over there for like 12 days for the FIBA Under 18 Asian Championships. Australia ended up winning it. A lot of talent. I really enjoyed my time over there.
We're gonna get more into that later. But like, did you just decide to do that on a whim, or I mean, did you know anyone over there, or did you just say,
no,
let's do it?
Yeah, I just said let's do it. I've always kind of been fascinated with recruiting Australia. And this was a chance to see all those guys and see 15 other teams. So just made a lot of sense. And maybe a week or two before, kind of really decided to do it, booked the flights, and went over there, man. It was a great experience, though. I'll try and get to the other countries to see those FIBA events as well.
So I guess let me back up a little bit. You were an assistant coach at Presbyterian, and your staff got let go.
That's right.
And you made the decision pretty early on in the summer, if I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, but to create your own recruiting service, Recruiting Boost.
Yeah. When things didn't go well there at PC, my wife had been accepted to a few different graduate programs. And Clemson was one of them, and we both were Clemson graduates. And she kind of, we talked about it, and Clemson was really where she wanted to go, man. And, you know, I just knew it would be hard for me to take a job that maybe, you know, wasn't an ideal situation for me to live away from her. So pretty early on, I decided that, you know, this would probably be a good situation for me to do for a year or two. And, you know, who knows, you know, where it'll go and how long I'll be doing this, but so far I've really enjoyed it, man.
So you kind of a bold move, because you're young. How old are you, Cassius?
I just turned 27.
So 27, at the time 26, young in your coaching career, coming off your first, maybe second season as a Division I assistant coach, let go, and decide to kind of take a left turn, staying in the game but getting out of the coaching field. What kind of went into that thought process in terms of, I know you had your family situation and your wife got into a program in Clemson area and couldn't dictate where you were going to go based off your coaching career, but what kind of went into your thought process of career?
You know, man, it's a long career, you know, and I kind of sat down and kept that in mind. And, you know, there are a lot of guys that have been very successful from taking off a year or two and traveling around and seeing programs from a kind of a different perspective and being on a different side of it. So, you know, at the time I wasn't really willing to take a video or a double job. I've had, you know, some calls about those, but, you know, honestly, I thought it would be more beneficial to my career to do this rather than take an administrative spot. And I guess maybe we'll see in the future. But, you know, just the contacts I've been able to make and the places I've been able to go to see talent and expand my network and develop some relationships with coaches through my scouting service and recruiting service. I think in the long run, man, I'll look back on this as a smart decision. I guess we'll see, huh, Gordo?
Well, I love it. I mean, you bet on yourself. So many people are like so concerned with if I move out or move down a level, or if I get out, will I be able to get back in? Will I be able to get back up? Man, like, who cares? Live your life. Keep learning, keep getting better, and things will take care of itself, right?
Sure, man. You can look at, I'm nowhere near on these guys' levels, but Pat Kelsey took a year off, came back, became the head coach at Winthrop.
That's right.
New
That's right.
coach at Longwood. He was out of the business for years. And obviously his situation is bizarre, but he went from Adobo at UMBC to being the head coach at Longwood. There's no path, man, that's the exact way to do it. It's a long career. I'm a young guy. With me having 2 years of experience on the road, I think, if any time's the time to do something like that, it's probably right now.
Yeah, and that's not the first time you've bet on yourself in that manner. You mentioned you were, contacted about some support staff roles. I remember because you started as a manager at Clemson. I was fortunate enough to be around you for 1 year there before I moved on. But I remember like after you graduated undergraduate, and you were looking for a job, and there were some opportunities for you to be a GA. And you held out and wanted to kind of skip that step and go right to a video coordinator, right?
I'm glad that worked out. That was risky as well, but same situation. I kind of decided early on, I really did not enjoy school. It was funny. My wife, she's going on to get her PhD. She wants to be a professor, and I'm the complete opposite. So, I just thought I'd be a better coach if I could just concentrate on coaching 100% of the time and wouldn't have to deal with school. And lucky enough that John Cooper and Trey Meyer up at Miami, Ohio, believed in me and offered me a full-time video job right out of Clemson, right out of college. So,
I
it
remember
was a
that,
risky move
Cassius.
as well, man. But you just got to know, if you know what you want, there's no need to, falter on that. Like I said, it's a long career, man. There's plenty of time, and you just got to bet on yourself a little bit.
You changed my perspective a little bit because I remember at the time, you knew you were going to graduate, you knew you were going to need a job in coaching. And I remember at the time, maybe late spring, early summer, I had some people tell me about high major GA spots that I told you about, and you were like, I appreciate it. I'm really, would love to be at that program, but I don't think I want to do it right now. And I remember thinking you were nuts, and like, frankly, a little pissed at you, Cassius. But
Yeah, no.
after it all worked out, I was, it really did. It made me change my perspective a little bit and think, wow, maybe. What he's doing is the right thing, and maybe that's the way to go for people. But I think, again, going back to it, and this was a theme at our last conference, people kept talking about it. You got to bet on yourself, right?
Yeah, you do, man. And when I was making decisions like that, I always tried to make it obvious to whoever was trying to help me get positions like that how grateful I really was for those opportunities. But when you're telling a guy you're grateful but you're not going to take the job, sometimes they don't want to hear that, So, but at the same time, man, it's your career. You got to go in that office every day and you got to do that work. And if that's not something you're 100% into, I don't think that's fair to you. I don't think that's fair to the guy who's hiring you, if you're not going to go in there full steam and want that job.
No, no question. I commend you for doing all that and taking that risk because it's obviously worked out for you so far.
So we'll see.
Well, tell me about Recruiting Boost. You say we'll see, but you're doing something great right now. Tell us exactly what Recruiting Boost is and what you do and what you've learned.
Yeah, for sure. So Recruiting Boost is my company. I'm the owner, the only employee. It's an NCAA approved recruiting and scouting service. So starting out, it was just a recruiting service. I was lucky enough to get some kids early on I guess this was August of 2017 is when we moved to Clemson. So I got some kids to kind of believe in my vision for it, and didn't really have any track record for this side of it. But being a former coach and being on that side, I was able to sell personal relationships and really knowing guys in the business and not relying on, cold emails like a lot of exposure companies do. So, and it kind of took off after that, man. I had some success with my first few clients. My clientele kind of grew and grew and grew. And it got kind of wild there for a second. I started to, learn, get more contacts at the Division II level, had a lot of clients at that level, had about six or seven kids at the Division I level, and then had quite a few at the JUCO level as well. So that part just took off. And then maybe 2 to 3 months ago, I was getting so many calls from coaches about where players are, what players are still available, and things of that nature. And one day I just decided, it's probably a good idea to start a scouting service too. So went through the process with the NCAA to get approved for that. And that went fairly quickly. So we're up to maybe about 15 to 20 schools subscribed so far at a Division I and Division II level. So that part's going well.
So you started off providing athletes with a service, helping them get exposure, getting their info out, getting their tape out, and then evolved into a scouting service, which is what took you to Thailand for the FIBA Asia tournament, right?
Yeah, majority. Maybe, there are a few kids from over there that I'm talking to about the recruiting side, but mostly the high major and mid major programs that are subscribed to my service, and quite a few that were thinking about getting subscribed to my service. That trip really, got them over the hump. Because as a scouting service, you're always trying to get guys or get prospects on your reports that maybe other scouting services haven't seen or don't have access to. So I thought that trip would do that and really give my clients a hand up in recruiting, international and some kids that maybe some other programs haven't seen. So that's what went into that decision.
So you were recruiting dudes 2 years ago, and now you're on the other side helping kids get recruited. So what are some of the things you've seen, and what have you learned being on the other side of that equation?
Well, the main thing, man, that's really been mind blowing, just because I've always worked at the Division I level, but Division II basketball is really, really good, like really good, and that was mind blowing to me because if you've never worked at the level, you have an idea of what you think their talent is, but the best Division II schools have mid-major players, so that part has been really eye opening, and then just seeing different staffs, how they evaluate talent, how much research they put into talent. There's different ways to skin a cat, but it's been really revealing to see. It seems like the more consistent programs do a lot more research and recruiting and watch a lot more games on film and watch a lot of AAU games and watch film as a staff and get input from each guy on staff. But that seeing that from the other side has really been eye-opening for me.
Doesn't that sound like so basic? But so you're saying like in general, the best programs actually like do a ton of research on the dudes they're about to sign?
A ton, man, a ton. It's just, it does sound simple, but it really isn't, man. They, the consistent programs, the programs that win a lot of the times, those are the ones that if they're not at every AAU game in the summer, they've seen every single AAU game in the summer. I've had the privilege to be around a few high major programs this last week or so, and they got kids coming on visits, and before the visit, they're in there watching their AAU film again, just thinking of different ways to recruit this kid. So, I would say just the film evaluation is a lot of times what take these programs to another level.
What are some things that you see that make you scratch your head and some mistakes that you see on the recruiting side?
Just touching on that again, man, just the whole late recruiting session here. That part is sometimes baffling, the lack of research some schools do. Because sometimes it gets June and July, and coaches really get, I remember being antsy, and you really want to just go ahead and get a guy done. So you might bring a guy on a, on campus evaluation on an official visit, work, and maybe base your evaluation on that one workout more than you normally would earlier in the spring. You know what I mean? So I just think that, that late evaluation and just being a little rough sometimes can skew your judgment as an evaluator,
Has social media really changed recruiting, and how much do you utilize, Twitter and Instagram to get in touch with these kids and to find out about kids?
Yeah, I think it's changed recruiting entirely. There's just so much information out there on each kid, especially American kids. There's just so much free information and opinions and scouts and things tweet out things for free. So there's a lot of information, but there's a lot also smoke and mirrors, some of those programs and some of those scouts may be tweeting those things out to get people to their events or, to help the kid out. So you'll see evaluations on a kid on Twitter, and you'll go see a kid in person and you'll think, man, that's not what I was sold. So I think just the hype factor of social media kind of makes it even more important to kind of do your research and go see kids even more. But as far as recruiting booths, man, I use Twitter. Twitter's probably 90% of what I use to find kids and find diamonds in the rough for the recruiting service side. And I utilize that quite a bit, tweeting out, what my clients, what offers they have, and also a lot of coaches. I use that for to get in contact with a lot of coaches. There's some coaches, most of them I have their cells, but most of them it's just Twitter direct message. When a guy follows you, you can direct message them. That's going right to their phone, just like a text message is. So I think Twitter and Instagram can both be huge assets in the recruiting battle.
What about all these kids that put out, or kids or services or whatever that put out, that they have offers from 15 different schools, and then you go see them, and the reality is they may have one or two offers or none. Are you advising kids not to do that, or, what is kind of your thought process on that whole deal?
Yeah, I mean that when a coach finds out you're lying about offers, the first thing they're going to think is, okay, what else are you lying about? I usually, not usually, I always don't tweet out about where my clients got an offer from until I've usually okayed that with that coach and I confirm that with that coach, because this day and age, man, you'll be talking to a coach can be talking to a kid and telling them and recruiting them. And they feel like they've been offered, but there's a whole difference between being recruited and actually being offered a full scholarship. So sometimes you just got to be clear in getting the verbiage right and knowing that those kids have actually been offered. But I've always told my clients to just double check and make sure, coach, I just want to make sure you're offering me a scholarship that I can accept. You know what I mean? And that's the difference between an offer and a recruitment. If you can't commit to a school, you don't have an offer, is what I tell a lot of my clients.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, just I think you see it more and more, and just a pet peeve of mine when you see, and coaches are just as bad, wanting that attention on Twitter, so they put out information that maybe isn't true, or maybe they're just, naive to the game, and I know a lot of college coaches do that, throw out offers that aren't legit. But yeah, you see
For
it out there
sure,
all the time.
for sure.
What about
Yeah, or your
transfers,
seat.
Cassius?
Yeah,
I know
the
that has
transfer
like
market.
taken off. Sorry, cut you off. I know that has taken off like crazy, and probably just started hitting. Like you probably got into recruiting boost right at the right time, where the transfer market exploded, right?
Yeah, it was unbelievable this year, man. They're just a surplus, man. There's only so many scholarships and there's a ton of players available. This year there were guys that started in Division I programs and averaged double digits who, for whatever reason transferred at the wrong time or maybe had character flaws or whatever, but end up walking on to another Division I program for a year. Which is mind-boggling. I feel like 3 or 4 years ago, if you average double digits at a Division One, you announcing you were transferring. I mean, you got offers immediately. But there's just so much more to choose from now, man. There's the grad transfers is what, you know, a lot of programs prefer. So if you're a guy that got to sit one to play two, you know, you're already behind the eight ball on that front. And then add in some other things while you're leaving and reasons for leaving. And, you know, everybody's calling the coach you just left from to get take on it. Maybe he don't have great things to say. So for transfers, it's hard, man. I've always said that. You know, if every kid that decided to transfer this year, if they knew what their options would be after they announced their transfer and where they would end up, we would probably have about 80% less transfers, man, because most of them go down. And I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but I would assume about half of them ended up nowhere, man. It's just limited spots, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. It seems like the market is so diluted. There's so many, like you said, there's just so many out there that you got good players who you know, double, like you said, double digit scores at a Division I school. And because there's so many out there and no one's really thinking about guys that got to sit out a year, that they end up,
right,
you know, staying on the market. I'm sure you run into this a lot, where you probably hit up a kid who's transferring, asking if they want your help, and they probably say, no, I'm good. And then maybe a month later, 6 weeks later, I bet you they're beating down your door.
Man, all the time, all the time. You know, everybody has been sold what they can get and what'll happen when they do announce their transfer. But, you know, it takes 2 or 3 weeks for them to really realize, okay, this is what's really on the table. This is what I can really commit to. And then, yeah, they'll double back and say, okay, coach, yeah, let's talk about this thing. Maybe I do need your help. But, you know, it's just a tough market. It's just a tough sell when you got to sit out. It's just really tough. But that, for I always tell players, man, you got to really think about what your head coach will say when those coaches call him, because that's the biggest, you know, when you're a transfer, your evaluation is a lot easier because we just got in-game film against college players. We know if your game translated to college or not, you know, but the character flaws and the things off the court is really what goes into a lot of college programs taking a kid from another program.
What about grad transfers? Is that still, I know you touched on it, but are they still in high demand, or do you see that demand diminishing a little bit as well?
They're in higher demand for sure. But, you know, a lot of the smaller schools, some of the smaller Division I schools, number one, don't have grad programs. So that wipes out a bunch of them. And number two, you know, it just depends on what your field of study is and if you can get into that school. You know, getting into grad school isn't just like getting into undergrad. So you got to be a better academic student. You got to take the GRE and sometimes have a certain score. So, you know, the academics play a part in that as well.
But, I mean, are you seeing those kids? Because, I mean, most schools can get guys in if they really want to, or a lot of schools. I shouldn't say most, because there are some
right
that don't make exceptions. But, you know, like we're talking about a double-digit score leaving a Division I school that has to sit out. They may not have – you're seeing their options diminish over the years, and especially this summer, maybe last summer. But a double-digit score that's a grad transfer that can play right away, they're going high major, right?
If they have the size at that position, yeah, pretty much they're going high major. You know, it varies obviously kid to kid, but you know, if you're a shooting guard, you're 6'4", 6'5", and even if you're, you know, a Division II grad transfer at 6'4", 6'5", and you're really shooting the ball around 40%, you got double digits. I mean, you're going to have mid-major plus looks for sure. And a lot of programs, including you guys, have looked at the Division II level to get kids that can really, really score the basketball, man. So, you know, a Division I transfer, he's not only competing against high school kids, junior college kids, other Division I transfers. Now he's competing against Division II transfers. So maybe at an all-time high when it comes to transfers, man. There's just so many options at so many different levels.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, about the lower levels, a lot of those guys, you know, some of the better Division II programs, they got mid-major dudes. Everyone's trying to get the same guys. I mean, everyone's trying to win their league.
Right.
And to win your league, you need players that are better than your level. So,
for sure, for sure.
It almost doesn't matter where they're coming from.
Right, right. And their benefit, you know, sometimes they can take a kid that's a little lower academically. And I've seen that here in this last week or so when, you know, it's time to move in and maybe kids didn't quite get admitted and, you know, their only option is Division II. So the Division II schools, man, they got players, man. The best Division II schools, they have at least two or three mid-major players. So that's a whole nother level. And that's something I didn't know before I got into this, man. The amount of talent at the Division II level is just – it's unreal.
What are you seeing kids go for in the recruiting process? I mean, obviously you like to think that relationship is the key, and if you build a great relationship with a kid, you'll have a good chance to get them on campus or get them. But what are you seeing now that you're on that other side that kids are really going for, or, you know, facility, whether it's facilities or level, relationship with the head coach, relationship with the recruiting coach?
Yeah, a little bit of all that, man. I think probably facilities is number one. You know, these kids want to live in a nice dorm and play in a nice gym. I think attendance is big, crowd support, fan support around the town. You know, a lot of kids don't want to play in the empty gym. You know, this day and age, the gear is is huge. So when the kids come on campus and taking their pictures in the uniform and the shoes, they like that a lot. The relationship with the coaching staff is good. You know, a lot of guys want to play for a coaching staff that believes in them and kind of have a vision for their game. And a lot of my clients, I try to kind of steer them into, you know, let's look at how many kids they've placed in the pros. You know, if that's something you really want to do, you want to play overseas, you want to have a shot at the NBA, well, let's look at their track record in doing that. I think that also can be a huge selling point.
Don't you think at the end of the day,
when you're a big time school like SEMO and you got guys balling in the summer league like that, I mean, you can just get who you want, you know?
Well, first of all, shout out to Antonius Cleveland, signed a 2-year deal with the Chicago Bulls. So
let's go, baby.
He'll be playing on regular season, Christmas Day, and all that. But
no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. Isn't like level still, or I'll say this, I find that level, no matter how hard you recruit a young man, no matter how much time you put in, and no matter the quality of the relationship you build, you know, sometimes you can overcome that level factor, but if a high major school comes in or a mid-major plus, like, it's hard to hang on to that dude. Would you agree? I mean, it takes a special kid to kind of ignore that and say, no, this is the place for me at this lower level.
Yeah, I agree with you. It takes a special kid, but it also takes like a special coaching staff to kind of sell him on that, you know, that their level is better for his career. You know, especially if the high major comes in late, I think the coaching staff has a better shot of, you know, explaining to them the high major school's process of how did they get to you on the board, you know, let's be realistic about it. You've been at the top of our board for this long, and let's go through verbal commits. This is who they missed on. He committed here. He committed here. So, you know, you got to just be honest with yourself. And do you want to be that fifth or sixth guy that was on their board, or do you want to go somewhere where you could potentially be a starter from day one and really have an impact? But for sure, it's definitely hard, man. The level, being on TV, you know, the ACC, SEC, it's a hard uphill battle. But I think depending on when the high major comes in, and hopefully it's just one high major. I mean, when you're going against a few, you pretty much have no shot. But depending on the timing, I think you could work some angles to maybe stay in there.
Right. When you're a head coach, Cassius, and I'm watching you on TV, are you going to have a system that you recruit only specific guys that fit your system, or are you going to recruit the best players and figure out how to play from there?
Man, I'll tell you what, 2 years ago, I would tell you I'm just going to recruit the best players. But the more I watch basketball, the more I'm around good programs. I like the system approach, man, to be honest with you, and to just know, okay, this is exactly what we want in a point guard. This is, you know, and we can falter a little bit here and there, but, you know, we want a point guard to shoot 36% and above. We want a two guard, 6'4" and above. We want like those programs that have specific specifications on kind of what they want. I think about somewhere like Davidson. I think about my guy Trey Meyer at Furman. I think about, you know, schools like that that kind of, you know exactly what they want and don't fall too much. Those schools are usually pretty consistent when it comes to winning. And I don't think that's coincidence. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with you. Although I wouldn't turn down a guy that's going to change my program with his talent level.
For sure. There's exceptions.
Yeah, but I agree with you for the most part. I mean, there's so many guys out there that can play, and I think it helps when you can actually narrow your pool a little bit, as crazy as that might sound. But when you know what you're looking for, you know, hey, we're building our program on toughness. So if he's not the toughest dude on the court at his AAU game, we're not interested. You know, now you know exactly what you're looking for. Or we want shooters. So like you mentioned, Davidson.
For sure.
You know if Davidson's at it. And I see this with Belmont because they're in our league. You know when you see Belmont coaches at an AAU game, there is somebody on the court that can absolutely shoot the lights out.
Right. And that, you know, not to go into a football rant here, but, like, you know, I live in Clemson. I'm a Clemson graduate. But, you know, Clemson football does that. And the benefit of kind of recruiting to a specific thing is, like, their first day every single year, they're doing the same exact things, you know. So, like, I think sometimes when you just take the best player, you might have to change your offense to, you know, cater to that player's abilities a little bit. But, like, good programs, like I'm saying, Clemson football, like, their first day, they're repping the same things they did the first day the last 5 years. Their second day, they're repping the same. You know what I mean? So I think, like, in basketball, maybe you can have more consistency because you're keeping that same offense and, you know, your sophomores and juniors and seniors have kind of been through the fire and they're picking on quicker because you did the same as that thing last year. And I just think they can help coach those guys a little quicker when, you know, you don't have to change offenses quite as much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great point. And you probably get better at teaching it because you're teaching the same thing over and over again.
Same thing, man. I think there's a lot to be said about, you know, having a formula to win and really believing in that formula and not deviating from that. So when I'm a head coach one day, hopefully I'll kind of know exactly what I want to do for my program and try to not falter from that very much.
All right, you mentioned Clemson, and I'm a Clemson guy too. So let's talk about the Tigers for a little bit. What is the transformation you've seen there over the last 5 years? How has that athletic department changed?
Well, I think Coach Brunell has kind of found a formula that works for him, which is the transfer market. When you look at Sheldon Mitchell and Marquise Reed and Elijah Thomas, you know, it's hard for Clemson to get those guys out of high school, really hard. That's just the reality of it. But they found a way to sell to those guys, you know what I mean, on the transfer market, kind of how they've been able to make transfers successful. And that's worked, and I think they should continue to do that. But, you know, when you're recruiting guys out of high school and you're at Clemson, it's hard to beat Duke for Zion Williamson. It's hard to, you know what I mean, go into a living room and recruit against Coach K and those guys at the upper tier of the ACC. So, you know, I just think they're just going back to what we were saying earlier. I think, you know, their formula for the transfer market for guards especially has been really successful for them and kind of took their talent pool to a whole nother level. I feel like, you know, offensively and defensively, they kind of the same that they've always been, but you know, that transfer markets took their talent, man, to a whole nother level.
Good, man. You excited for Clemson football season?
I'm fired up, Gordo. I'm fired up. We got Furman, the first game, I think, September 1st. And we got a little quarterback controversy here, but we're going to get that figured out. We're going to be ready to go.
Awesome. Casho, anything else you want to touch on?
I think we touched on everything, man. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, and if people want more information about Recruiting Boost, how can they find you?
Best way is to follow me on Twitter at CBosket, CBosket. And kind of everything I do is shot out there and links to my website and things about my clients. So that's probably the best place.
All right, Cassius.
Yep.
Appreciate you being on, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Gordo.